This is a production of Cornell University.
UA meeting, October 24th, 2007.
I would like if new members to the assembly would, the assembly would introduce themselves. I believe Alex is one. Undergraduate member, Alex James. And any other new members here? Are you new this?
I was here last meeting.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm still new.
Okay. Good. Did you introduce yourself last meeting?
I can introduce myself.
Yes, please.
I'm Dr. Rodriguez. I'm a graduate
professional rep, right? GPS rep. I and you, yes, right. Hi. Well, terrific. I know Jim Glynn is coming later, but he did, and this is, we're moving on now to late additions to the agenda. He did want us to consider a resolution which we've put in your packet to increase graduate student representation on the campus planning committee. This was this resolution results from some discussion we had at our last meeting, where it was suggested by Barbara Knudsen, that we have two representatives, and so in order to accomplish that, he put together this resolution. It's a late addition to the agenda, but I know we have a full agenda, but can we just take 2 minutes? Could you read it, please? And I'd like to take action on it now, because it's a procedural question, but it would be a good one to get out of the way. R7, resolution to increase. Did you see it? Sorry. Okay, speed readers, are there any comments on this resolution? Does anybody want to move it?
So moved.
Randy, and seconded by David, or David and Randy.
What? So I moved it, whatever.
Okay. And so any debate, discussion? Yes.
I had a question about the language in 9.1, the second paragraph. First sentence, the position appointee to designate should be individuals with professional and technical expertise in the science and related fields. Is that something feasible that you can get representative of?
Well, we have in the past.
So the position appointee is supposed to be a private.
Oh.
So the people that are appointed, they have to attend another.
These are not the graduate students. Oh, okay. This is another group. Okay. Yeah. Any other points of questions, discussion? So we move to a vote. All those in favor of Resolution 7 to increase graduate student representation on campus planning committee, signify by saying aye. There are 14 here and all seem to. Any opposed? No abstentions. So passes unanimously for those present. Oh, by the way, everybody make sure you sign in to the paper, the roll call paper. Thank you. This is not an addition to the agenda, but I just wanted to say that after our presentation, on the campus planning committee, there's a note that there will be discussion of a possible resolution in support of key principles and strategic direction proposed to him. In fact, the resolution is no longer possible, it is actual, and we will discuss that at that point in the agenda. So onwards to the next item on the in the minutes, and that is the approval of the minutes. Let's take them one at a time. Any additions or corrections? These did come to you within a day of today. Let's look at August 22nd. Have you had a chance to peruse them? Or it? We'll do a quick read. Okay, anybody want to move acceptance to this?
I'm quoting a slightly funny way,
but I'm sorry, what? Page 2. You said construction.
The volume of construction in this, it is a little bit
compromised. So the volume, the extent of construction,
if we're going to include the aesthetic, that would also be the nature of construction as well as the size of the construction. But
yeah.
The whole thing of their constituents, who's done there, who's there?
Right. So the question would be, if you with these minutes as they come through, it's useful if I know we had only one. Right. It would be useful to have that sense. If you have, is there any other thoughts that people have on what they're quoted as saying?
The well-being of the Cambridge community.
Right.
I think that is very
good. That's fine. That's what doing the minutes are about, and passing them through. If we need to correct them, that's fine. So does that seem like a reasonable correction?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, anybody want to move these minutes as they're corrected? Rodney, second. Thank you, Tamara. So all in favor? Any opposed? Unanimous. The next is September 5th. Quick peruse.
Excuse me.
Last two. Captures the spirit of this. Okay. Any additions, corrections? All those who anybody gonna move the minutes be accepted?
Mm-hmm.
David Rosen, second. Rodney, any discussion? No discussion. All those in favor? Opposed? None. Okay. Moving forward, reports from standing committees. We are fortunate to have in our midst Mina Amundsen, and she, Dan Brown, the chair of the planning, excuse me, the UA member on the planning committee. Are you now still, are you the chair? You haven't decided yet. No, I'm sorry, Randy, are you the chair? Of the planning committee?
No, the liaison.
Randy will introduce this certain
person. I'm not actually sure what the difference between a standing committee and...
You're a standing... All committees are standing committees. We determined that last time. Some are associate and some are...
Some are campus light, some are associated, and some are... Of the assembly.
That's it.
Some are more standing than others.
Right.
So
some standing up more.
I want to talk about an outstanding.
So,
and, so To my knowledge, we haven't met since Barbara Ruth came here. There is a meeting tomorrow that I can't attend, but Harry and Elizabeth will attend. And today, Nina Edmondson, the university planner, will give a short presentation of the master plan, and then we'll open for comments, questions.
Well, we can poll the members. I know that we've had the invocation by Randy that we read through the plan and maybe participate in that PowerPoint, and some of us have been able to do that. Others perhaps read summaries. But what does the membership feel would be most productive, having done the work prior to the meeting? Any thoughts about that? No.
Okay. What I thought I would do was maybe build a highlight of the master plan, and then, really open it up for questions, and then sort of voice through the plan that way. It's just a vast undertaking. It's a comprehensive plan. We have an uncomfortable comprehensive plan already. There have been several plans over time, but we felt it was time for us to really take stock, look at the entire campus, and look at it in a very comprehensive way. And this sense of being able to know that the campus do not look at implementation. public course planning framework. This is not a basic plan that tells you where system activity will go. But it's a framework that helps to guide development and, you know, give us a sense of where you would like to develop things and what things will be. And also to help make decisions about what kind of development should go where. So what we will have as a constant in the plan is the organizing framework that's really the growth of the landscape. That stays constant throughout, you know, throughout the long term. But we would have development blocks in which you would say, this is the capacity of this block, this is how you could organize buildings, this is what's important to this part of campus. But within that, you need the flexibility for development that happens at a certain period of time. You couldn't say now that I would have areas, parcel areas of this size, and they suddenly would thank you very much. The program came along with required something different. But you would have principles. Something else that's a pretty important piece of a plan is how we look at the campus, its size, and its land base. Most people know about the 758 of campus, which is the University Avenue and Crossway Road, and includes everything between the two gorges in North Campus residential area and into this. So that's what we call a core academic direction. What we wanted to include and acknowledge and really not forget was the entire land base of east, north, and south of the whole campus, which is the area that most directly reflects the land run activity on the campus. All of the areas that we think of as fields and wooded areas and hilly areas and sort of beautiful natural areas. Those are actively used in keeping research in our case. And so are directly connected to the academic mission. So we felt that the built environment was as important as the funding for the particular area. So the planning principle in the plan is the idea of conserving the open air. And what we have looked at is really concentrating the development in the core, what we call the compact core, and keeping that footprint, the development footprint within the core. So it's still between, largely between Harvard Road, University Avenue, and Oregon. But recognizing that areas like the orchards and all the areas east and north and south need to stay open because they encourage programs that otherwise use them. And, you know, how do we then fix growth, you know, in a way that still keeps the character of homeland? We've also looked at adding height and density. You will see a combination of things that are doing in escalation to the plan. You'll see 3 to 4 to 5 story buildings. Again, what we try to do is look at the topography that they do share. You'll also see in some places towers. And Cornell is a campus that is, the skyline is distinguished by a tower, either, you know, whether they're towers or really tall buildings. And the idea was that you know, in that kind of environment, there is room for them. They do need to be very carefully placed because they are visible from all directions. So that's something that I think is one of the things that should be resolved in the plan. This is a block plan, so there is a lot of stuff that's returning and is being finished and finalized and defined. And you know, as we get input this fall, I think all of that is constantly growing in input to the plan. Another big idea was to simplify. When we went out and talked to the community, before we began really thinking about planning, we spent late spring, summer, and the fall of the 6th talking to a lot of people. We talked to representatives from student groups, the employee assembly, the faculty senate, but also other subgroups that we got together. And these are groups both from the campus and from the surrounding, from the residential community. So what we recognize is that the big campus, as we see, is the took all of those comments very seriously and put them into a set of values and themes. And those values and themes, along with what your work use intentions will, really are pretty sensible. So the key themes are then, and the driver for that is the academic mission, making sure that that is supported in the best possible way. But at the same time, how do you ensure the stewardship of the physical resources of the campus? And how do we create a sense of community, both on the campus and with the residents? So that's, I think, another key piece in the plan. And how do you keep the campus experience or enhance it or strengthen it where it needs to be? And the last but not the least, and again, I think really key to making this all happen is an integrated approach to planning. So making sure that the physical planning is in step with the academic planning and not lagging several steps behind, and making sure that the decisions both on the academic, financial, and physical planning are happening. So that last piece is something that we're working on. We're working with Perry in the student office and the service office and we set up the committee structure for the plan. Was also fairly inclusive. We wanted to make sure that we were listening to all voices in the university. So the campus planning committee has been, I think, a really important influence on the plan. The planning committee was instrumental in both deciding the campus plan situation. They conducted a benchmarking study for the next 4 years. We looked at the plans of different campuses, did a pretty thorough study of why they planned, what they did in their plans, what worked, what didn't work. Looked at what the plan is, you know, 5 years after the plan, for example, what was working on. And we took all of those learnings, put it into a report, and that I think is what the committee's record. Yeah, it should be. And we presented that to the convener, and we used that to guide the decision of the kind of plan that we all have to take in. Something that we also taught himself was an inclusive process of the pandemic would be the best way to get our plan to a certain form and also to view in reality. We have a story of Columbia who was fresh in our minds where we hired some of the best designers on the plan and then community feedback. And we just did not want that to happen. Because it was more important to our people there and include their and then, bring people along forward. So that's, and I guess the presentation is a part of that process as well. The other big issue was transportation and connection. There was a very strong wish to have a pedestrian-friendly campus. Having a completely pedestrian campus was not possible. Even the four campuses have 50 acres space and taxi space. So we felt that we could make a campus that was as pedestrian friendly as it could be pedestrian and in part. But we think we have two areas that are pretty much and then we have a lot of buses on the campus. We have an extensive e-tag network that runs through the campus and connects us to the town community. So the idea was, how could you make that movement on campus less confusing and more effective? So one idea that's really forward in the plan is having a very simple circulation use on the campus that can be just one bus on three different directions. You can come on campus where you're primary route, having legs that connect to North Campus, College Town, downtown, and then the eastern area. And that route will be connected to the T campus. So those are conversations we actually initiated with T campus. What we're trying to do is support TCAS, but also make the campus an environment that is in control of the traffic and not confused and doesn't operate. And make it easy for people to just get around. Recognizing that you also have a bad weather, cold, windy, wet, and so on. Some that came up from our conversation with campus and physical communities was that the campus itself had a lot of activity on one side, so really the red side, what we call the harbor campus. So we've seen light flow and roughly the access. And then once you went east, we got to the quiet. So we thought we would try and extend green amenities to a site that would be underserved. So one of the other ideas in the plan is creating a mixed-use node in this campus. And we're looking at the area that's roughly the Storm Field, Eastern and Alumni Field, and then the area that already has buildings around the green halls, shopping halls, and the block. And so that block we develop over time along with the structure, at least then become a mixed-use node. We were trying to bring some of the social and cultural other dynamics in the library that are on the campus. Try to have more of them in the environment that people are friendly and more. And then also thinking about Eastern Plaza and that area very differently. So we're looking at campus in a different, the bigger campus in some ways. So like North Campus, we're looking at that area south of Campus Airport and South Campus. So all of Naples, for example, County Fair, Eastern Plaza, Field, South of that. We look at East as call it South Campus and include it so we've been thinking about the campus. It's exactly to an off campus and we've been moving a lot of administrative staff out there. And we just want people to be alienated and so we also heard a lot of people talking about, of course, you see what Cornell is, Cornell Street Mall. More than 50% of visitors to Cornell come up Country Road, and it's not an attractive point of fashion. So the thinking is as we move people and youth and develop that area, what we could do is keep the existing commercial, but really strengthen that with adding office users, also adding housing. Another issue that came up very strongly was the need for housing and housing students. And this is for graduate students, faculty, and staff. And so we thought we would also look at where we could, where would be suitable locations to provide housing. There was also a need expressed that we can touch for housing, not just single family housing, but we would be plus. So a lot of students are not suburban areas in other countries. And that is also something that can be used in the development of housing. So that's another issue we're looking at. The town that we're looking at might be like a travel mixed use node in the town. This is also something that works very well with the company. They would like to see more of these lowly mixed-use development areas. So that's something we saw as a good opportunity. So, and then I think the relationship with Ithaca, which is something that we don't flesh out very much in the plan, again, because we don't have any control over what happens in Ithaca, and that's something that's very, very important to us. What we have done is also look at the development, the new development in Ithaca that tries to, we are surrounded by residential communities of all kinds. We are denser and more fine grained in the city of Ithaca and parts of the town, but then as you move east, they become more suburban and semi rural. So the idea was to maintain friendly adjacency, not to take huge big buildings and not just use it to turn into residential neighborhoods. So, it's largely open space, but we're also looking at for areas like College Town and Downtown where you have the dense urban parts of campus really adjacent to a fairly dense urban neighborhood. We're working very closely with the College Town Visioning Task Force and how they would like to see College Town develop, and once they have an idea of what they'd like to do, we will look for opportunities for business. And similarly with requirements that's left by the city that, you know, that focus on your food contest and to take away from the downtown. And that's not the intent. The intent would be, the idea would be to have all these three areas being between the social or complementary. You wouldn't have something happening in downtown that competes with college town or the people's town, so trying to make sure that what we can do in any of these areas is affordable. But what we are saying is that we will call these areas in which we accept an opportunity and then work with the city to see what we can do. So that essentially is the summary of the plan. And if you look through the presentation, I think most of it will be updated.
Thank you. Thanks very much. How do we want to handle questions and discussions? Do you want to be the moderator of those, Randy?
Sure.
Terrific.
In talking about development and what appears to be physical growth, how does that jive with the fact that students have indicated that they see no growth in the future for undergraduate students? And while there's a lot of new faculty hires, most of them are replacements, you see that the people growing can fill all of these buildings, or is just going to decrease the density of what we already have? So who's going to be in these buildings?
Well, we actually asked that question very early on to the program process. And the numbers we got were that there would be replacements, but there would also be future growth. And with that growing faculty, they work in the staff stage of the work. They're not programmed, they're not the graduate students. The graduate students are not the staff. So there isn't a huge growth of people that are interested. But what the trend, though, is that the number of square feet per person has increased over the last decade. So what we are doing is somewhat preparing ourselves for the work. Which is, right now, you know, we have a but things change really fast, and we don't know what's down the road. But it's good to have some set of some kind of a guiding framework. And if you have to ask people how do you do it, if you have to have the space, how do you do it in the best way? So that's really the standard.
Along that line, did you keep, I mean, when I first came to Cornell, there was a discussion about how, yes, there's a lot of research that goes on, but research is integrated with teaching, and they go hand in hand, and you have, you know, you have undergraduates participating in research, graduate students. So does that model continue in the growing, in spite of the fact that you may have an increase in staff and faculty, and perhaps not an incremental increase in undergraduates? Still, the model remains that, and not something where you have a separate research faculty and/or staff, 100% research, or 90%.
No, I think it's mixed models. That's the assumption going into the future.
Throughout.
But we want better connectivity on campus, recognizing that the undergraduate center is towards the west, and it becomes really hard. You know, if things move further east, we want to make sure that there really good circulation.
And the second component of my question was about extension and or outreach. Was that any factor in the discussion of how the campus would grow, the core campus, let's say, with the view that that extension and outreach both require the outside coming in, I guess you could say, and making room for them? It was a factor.
Yes, it was a factor. Uh-huh. And I think our news is, well, we have the chair of the campus planning committee, co-chairs, not on the master plan working committee, but she's also representing CAM. And I think that piece is coming fairly strongly from some of the campus.
Just a couple of observations and questions. One is, this seems to be completely disembodied from the program. Our department's never been approached to support the planning group and explain to them why we need green barns in the building and snow pastures right in the core of campus.
Mm-hmm.
People talk about taking another 366.
Mm-hmm.
Already, it's about 2 mile walk between their dorms and their college campus.
Mm-hmm.
They walk from lower campus to Morrison and off to Sherman Hall, but that's the two greenhouses now.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a pedestrian campus that's full of 700 acres. But the but we've never been approached on this. I have the impression that you're talking to provosts and deans and whatnot, hoping that's the route by which input given in programs. But they're really not, I mean, they do a lot of good stuff and they're important people. But they don't, I know in terms of our dean and the provost, they have no idea what they're doing in terms of, we've never seen them in our building in all these years.
So,
after
the decision came up, someone said they agreed with the team.
Yeah.
This issue and the issue of our studies are still unresolved.
Right.
I think one of the assumptions of kind of making that we will distribute our studies between the center, core campus, and any of the surrounding edges. But that's an issue that, you know, it needs to be much harder for people to go. And it's the same issue of, you know, accessibility to students and researchers. So that's something that we're still working on. Part of what we're working on is also the savings plan. Again, I don't think we may not have enough effort in that. So the idea is when we walk people to move, it's not that the whole one thing is that true, everything's going to be happening across the road. But we have fairly detailed input from CAP, and what we heard was, again, we had a presentation to the town being and all of the associates, you know, everyone else. And I know that we're not talking to the department. The thing is that we have not put a program in the plan. It tends to be something at a much higher level. However, CAL has just begun at a master class of college. So I think these issues are going to come up again. The master plan is not something that produces profit. It's not going to be the same one. We also plan to deliver on a state cycle, recognizing that some change. And even once the CAL master plan is done, that might come back to inform our next update. So it's not something that has been taken as a done deal. They're saying when this happens, these people have to move one organization. But that's something that, you know, there are things that are well resolved, there are things that are not well resolved. And I'm going to be completely honest about that.
Yeah, I just didn't want to get, I mean, you've had these charrettes or these old mouses over the last couple of years, and we've had people from the Spartan Hotel all over here talk about the entrance to the campus of the old road and the trees and the pastures and this sort of thing. And, and they've been well received and encouraged and talked about the needs for teaching and for doing and talked about the needs for greenhouse teaching for veterans.
Mm-hmm.
Which is yes. And it's white. It is absolutely annihilated in your plan.
Yeah.
And so the input, I mean, like I said, the deans and social students, they do important jobs. I'm not being facetious. They do important jobs. They do have input. They do, you know, important scientific things. But they do not, as a group, really have a clue what's needed for teaching, what's needed for research, and why, you know, the students walking from Postdown, walking from Whitehall over here to Morrison Hall now, they're showing you can make this pedestrian campus down the side. They walk another quarter of a mile to the teaching barns and to the greenhouses with the veterans. That's about the limit of what you can expect. And even if they run, you can hop a bus, you can run a bike. You're at the edge now. You can't throw this stuff across the or else you will have to do more transportation, and it violates all planning principles. This is not a choice anymore.
And that's true.
And because you have to talk, I think, to the people who know.
Now, this issue has been brought up, and it hasn't, people haven't been quiet about it. It's still something that
people
have to know about. But I would say that. what can be facilitated space and why you guys sort of pushed out of it. But I just want to ask you, why do we need all these buildings? Who decides when we need all these buildings? Are buildings being built and millions of dollars being spent on buildings that are mostly, to my mind, terribly ugly, and the construction is terribly disruptive. We're reading student columns now, even in the Cornell Review, very upset about, why does Cornell hate us? They're making a difference in construction. I heard this from my students at graduation. And I don't think it's a one-time thing to say, oh, in 3 years at all, they're going to continue. There's always an uproar about construction, which really spoils the quality of life. The buildings that are built are often built in the service of, I think, ego. I mean, people, executives, presidents, a lot of people see through their ego manifested in buildings. Maybe donors do. I don't know. Maybe that's part of the strategy. And I know that architects do. So we're given these buildings. Like this one, this is a picture of the Clark Atrium. Okay? What's missing here is those 7 or 8 or 9 marvelous big hundreds of years of tree growth, oak trees, gone, cut up, gone. Talk about view shed. It's not even view shed anymore. You don't look out now and see the texture of the hills and so on. You just get this big atrium. It's like making Cornell into spaceship Cornell. So everything is inside with steel and glass. No trees, no grass. You've got to heat this. You're going to light it all night, it says here. It's going to be lit all night. These big buildings that they're building lately, they not only blaze with light, like Apple, which is a horrendous example of light blazing all night, but destroys the astronomy from the observatory, because there's too much light. You ever go to the observatory after 9, you try to see something, you've got to try to walk out. Why is all that light, that huge blazing light in that open space under Apel, for which there is no apparent reason, for huge rates of wasted fuel, that building roars. If you're walking on the other side of Beaver Lake at night, you hear the roar of a pebble. They designed it so they push the sound over to the huge up here, I guess, so they push it over to other people. Buildings that roar and blaze and replace green space with steel and glass, this is not as pretty as the grassy hillside that the community used to have there. Why can't older buildings be retrofitted? We've got some useful examples of that in space. The business school and Lincoln, where the old building east of the bottom was kept and the building was expanded, and it's very beautiful because the older buildings that we show in all our publicity, we don't show this stuff, and we're not going to show this side. We don't show Bradfield in our publicity. Nowhere, if you look up Plant Science, you find a picture of Bradfield, which is called the Tower of Doom by the people who work there, though I've been told by faculty and staff, no windows, hideous. You can't even build carts over the front floor, and the architect wouldn't allow them to come to the property floor. I mean, what are we doing here? The buildings, are they really needed? Why don't we put this money into faculty, into research, into graduate students? My department desperately needs graduates. We have huge enrollment. We have to cap all our big classes because we don't have enough grad students. We don't have staff that I spend hours and hours, it's the beginning and end of the term, doing all my own Xerox and reserve and stuff, because we're short of staff relating to academia. I understand, somebody told me, I hope this is wrong, that part of the reason the life sciences building is to free up Simpson so Day Hall can expand into Simpson. If staff means Day Hall staff, for God's sake. Wait, this is an executive empire, and the expense of what the university should be about. Sorry,
okay.
But I just wanted to say this in volume. Why do we need the buildings? Why are they all so ugly? Why do they not match the needs of the people who work in them? Why are we going to have to look at Millside, which is going to spoil the view shed, for a big glass enclosed, lighted, fuel space?
I couldn't answer the question of why we need those buildings. That is not a decision that the people are going to make. Those decisions are not controlled by us. So we are told that there is a need for program space and buildings, and we would like that to accommodate. But Professor Lee is broke and not for some of the decisions by the buildings. So
in that sense, the planning committee just basically executes in the least, or in some kind of way, what it's told to make room for. And that's really, it's planning of a sort. I'm not faulting the office or anything, but it's certainly not the the roots of planning, which is deciding what you need, and then
that's
going.
That's institutional setting, and that does not happen in the
right.
office. So we carry out the typical setting, but institutional setting is what controls us.
Right.
And they work with the different colleges to affect their needs and decide, you know, where the needs are in the space. Which is why some of the way they're planning.
I mean, let's describe something.
No, no, I completely sympathize with you, and you know there are some frustrations that we share as well. However, there are things that, you know, we have no control over.
But somebody does. And those are the people we need to be thinking about these issues. We need to make them here.
So here's on I'm an optimist, and I think China essentially hopes that optimist. Otherwise, you know, the person does. I'm an optimist, and I think you have to be patient and optimistic. The way we I'm sharing the Master Plan Working Committee that provides services. And the way we're trying to work this process is to really have both the physical planning and the academic planning inform each other to see how possible we are. And the plan is again somewhat of an extreme view of what this place would be. I don't think the need for this place is going to go away. We are in the plan, though, looking at effective view. So there are buildings that are identified. You don't have to build new space. But there are buildings that you think you can work very robust innovation and accommodate, you know, changing needs. So that's also part of the plan. It's not just new buildings. And a lot of the new buildings that you see in the plan are not, they're new, but they're also replacing buildings that are reaching the end of the new program. So there are buildings on the town side that are really missing a lot. So if they cannot be reused or adapted to be used, then you're proposing that once you reach the end of their life, take them down and put something in. Don't look at the architecture of the plan. I don't like it anymore than,
I don't think anybody likes it, so why
not? That's kind of not cool. Feedback from a lot of the buildings, most of them hate the architecture, and we're also working on how to represent that, which is building potential, but please don't look at the ugly building.
Why?
The phenomenon that Elizabeth described, mm-hmm. not just here in Cornell, it's across the country.
It's across the country.
25 years ago, a former governor in California told us we had a system where funds are put into buildings, but not into maintenance. So buildings reach the end of their useful life much faster than if they were properly maintained. Mm-hmm. And you have all this money in programs, and it's in buildings, yes. and nothing in programs.
Yes.
And it has haunted universities all over the country.
Right.
Maybe part of the integrated plan, mm-hmm. if you ever get people who need the buildings together, people who are planning the buildings, maybe an additional thing to be to address that is, you know, what about institutional direction towards people as opposed to nations? And that's, and that may change the scope and change the nature of the growth. You may have growth quality, you may have growth in utilization of existing buildings.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they're buildings, they build buildings here on speculation that grant funds will expand. They've already done it. A lot of our space is built with that in mind. It may or may not happen, even with the space we've got. So, we're building more spec buildings. I think this has to be part of it. And we need to involve people who are actually writing them, people who are actually living on the salaries from the grants, and ask them what they think the future is in terms of this unending increase in grant funds that they assume for this. They might get more diverse of opinions than just talking to a narrow band.
Marty, does the UA have a charge that would allow us to be interested in this higher node of not just where to put the buildings, but what buildings need to be made?
Well, that's what was coming from my question about, you know, how do you get what constitutes planning. I had assumed that the planning committee actually could say, now, do we really need that? But apparently it can't. And so then the question is there any committee or any role that we would have except to support strongly the initiative to make planning integrated the physical planning integrated with the conceptual one. I mean, if the city council can declare a moratorium on construction in College Town, one could imagine that there must be some body that could declare a moratorium on construction in the campus until some kind of master discussion across the disciplines and colleges with full participation would occur. I don't know whether this is something that you have any thoughts about, Dean the faculty.
Well, it's a very difficult problem because what happens at the moment is the deans say we need more space in the physical sciences for chemistry, applied engineering, and so on, to come together. And that is an important priority for the College of Arts and Sciences. And that then works its way up through the provost's office to a committee which is composed of the provost and the president and some financial types, and then it gets approved and so on to be designed. And what I think you want is to get inserted somewhere along the line with the dean and the provost to offer some counsel and advice and discussion of priorities. At the moment, there's essentially no faculty input other than departmental faculty pushing on the dean of the college to get the department more space. And that's really the route it works. And there's no check and balance on that process at all. And I've been thinking about how to do it, and I really don't know. But I think this is something the UA ought to discuss with the provost.
Yeah, maybe in this light we can ask the provost to come here. And I have a single question of someone else, how she makes the decision. And this actually comes from Albert Michelson, who is a physicist, won the first Nobel Prize, first American to win Nobel Prize. And he's talking about Case University, that their priorities were so wrong, and his quote is, they invest more in bricks than rain. And perhaps we can ask the province how she makes that balance and how she's going to invest in bricks and rain.
Well,
I think it'd be very good to have such a discussion with her, and because I know that she's been thinking about that very issue.
I think it's bad for one person to have that much power without being compelled to consult.
Well, Charlie's made the point that the deans put pressure, and we have representatives from departments. I don't know whether any of the departments, either staff or faculty, would have been the ones to go to their respective chairs and say, "You better get me more space." And then that chair would go to the dean, and the dean would say, "I would get me more space." And then the dean would be required to go there. I don't know whether any of the members here would be, but we are supposedly a representative body. And in the process, we ought to talk in the process of representing and getting our opinions together to represent our constituencies. We ought to consult with the people that are putting the pressure on. It is true. It's not just one person. I think it's a groundswell from different divisions of the university that put the pressure. And that's something that one could find out in discussion with the provost, at least. And then we could maybe get an idea of what we can do to get more opinion on the table, I guess, then.
But, to have people contesting to say, well, okay, you want more space for whatever. Isn't that the space you have, is it useful? Could it be upgraded? I mean, to say from, we need more space, which could be, I don't doubt this would be pretty legitimate, but to these monstrosity buildings that are so, they consume so much of the natural environment and the fuel and light and sound and everything, they make the environment so ugly, of from needing more space to that, there are a lot of decisions are made and a lot of alternatives are not considered.
One thing occurs to me is that the president has made a priority, at least one of two priorities he discussed at a recent the sustainability issue on campus. This is unsustainable if it is. It can be, I guess, ugly and sustainable. But if it's both ugly and unsustainable, at least you've got one prong, in talking about.
No, oil prices can take care of money.
Yeah. So it may be there needs to be some kind of trickle down from above about what translates sustainability into program needs, program goals, and implementation of those needs and goals. So we have that lever to pry into the big time decision making is what I'm saying, and we can raise that along with the question of brains and bricks as another one. How do we translate sustainability into decision making about space needs and implementation of how do we do that on the nuts and bolts level of every department? How do we educate departments, or if we can't do it, then how does the central administration do it? Educate departments on how to translate their interest or factor in sustainability and these other. And sorry.
I want to say, I think the master plan actually is very proactive in sustainability and having a plan of the environment. Respecting the voices and green spaces and creating more too. And some of the buildings, there'll be some subtraction due to the buildings not being so sustainable, the older buildings not being so sustainable.
But before you raise an older building, and you think that unlike Europe and all the rest of the world, the building here has a useful life of 25 years, why can't we renovate? We've done that with some buildings.
Yeah, we're not saying that the
I'd like to move. We have a couple of other comments, but I want to think about three or four more minutes of this, and then move on. But we ought to consider, perhaps, what we might want to do to address this question of the where the decisions about extension, what our role might be in those decisions. And that could be in the form of a resolution, not today, but eventually, that someone on plan, perhaps Randy or others, might have some input with Randy to an invitation to the provost to come visit us and discuss that. I'm making a proposal that we think about that as one concrete outgrowth of this. It may be in support of this integrated planning vision, the idea that you've proposed. I know that your request, I guess, communicated by Randy, was that we have some kind of resolution of support and an addendum to that, or perhaps integrated with it, might be some kind of clause that has to do with integration of the two functions of the and more attention in the planning committee to the bigger picture, what drives the decision and the needs for different facilities. Is that
I guess the mechanism to ensure,
right?
So
So let's all think about that as our next step, and in the next meeting or next meeting thereafter. I think next meeting is the codes and judicial, but we might have some time at least to sort of have a progress report on thinking about this resolution. We have, for example, the TIMS resolution here, the transportation resolution, which comes out of our previous meeting. So this can be the next step after our planning meetings to do a resolution of this sort in the next month or so.
Do you think we need to do the as-needed meeting in the middle of November?
We absolutely do, because we have to talk. It's already been authorized, and that's what the Codes and Judicial Committee meeting will be. Yes.
Thank you.
think it's too late to do anything about Clark. If they're going to cut down all the trees and they're going to put up this that would be extremely expensive to operate. But Millstein hasn't been done yet. And you talk about view sheds. That there's going to be the most ghastly view shed. Instead of looking at the gorge, the bridge, the open, the trees, you're going to drive into campus through a tunnel of the buildings, through glass and steel. It's not too late to stop that. They had other designs. That I understand it was a design from a German designer that just was for like a parking lot and not for that across the road tunnel thing. It's so inappropriate because it's kind of dirty. But what would be, as a social scientist, if we can understand how this campus has gone so wrong and built so many ugly dysfunctional buildings, and just by the dysfunctional, I'm thinking, especially with Bradford, everything I hear from my students and faculty who work there is that there are no windows in the building and they hate every room they spend there. How did this ever happen that a building like that was built for an academic community to force them to work in that building? But yeah, I would love to see the social scientist case study of how disastrous decisions were made. Like Bradfield, Clark, Millstein, I think it's real. But just Redwood Woods. What was the first, you know, from the go? I mean, social science is a thing. I'm not wrong to do it. But from the first idea, somebody says, we need more space. Or somebody says to Hunter Ron, okay, we need a parking lot to go with West Campus because students have to be able to drive their SUVs here. And the whole thing is that that's one of the ways we attract students. We have a parking lot below where the West Campus are. Got to have a parking lot. And then everything else falls from that. Nobody ever steps back and questions it. But how do we get from a decision that the physicists need more space to this hideous, unnatural building? There, a lot of decisions are made along the way. Who makes them? What are their values? Who's in the room? What do they talk about? If we had that kind of process tracing, we know where we're going wrong. And we could try to interrupt that, bring more people into the conversation earlier, bring more value, like green space, aesthetics. The idea that buildings could match each other is so alien here, but it makes
this like a pleasant. Well, let's figure a way this can be translated into something the UA could do something about. And I suppose the beginning would be to, I mean, maybe there's a subcommittee of a planning committee that could go into something like this, but the beginning for the UA body as a whole would be to have an audience with the provost and discuss, you know, these general concerns that we have, and at the same time think about what kind of a resolution of support of the plan and what elements of the master plan we want to emphasize in that resolution that will address some of the, you know, burning concerns that we have. We'd have to vote on it as a resolution and discuss it and debate it, and I think that would be an important next step. We've only had 4 or 5 people now in the UA talking about this, and I think everybody would have to have a part. Charles?
Well, Marty, one of the things that strikes me as I listen to the discussion is there's considerable agreement around the table, really. The idea of preserving green space, of preserving the rural character of the university, that is the setting, the idea of having planned growth rather than random growth, I mean, it seems to me that there is some level of general agreement, and I think that's really rather cheerful.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to be. I'm maybe like a planner. I'm an optimist. I think though that we can express that through a resolution of support of the plan. At the same time, we can in that resolution, like Dan did with the transportation one, which we want to look at pretty quickly. We can emphasize certain things we would like to continue to participate in and be made aware of periodically and have some input on. And they could be concerns like emphasizing our interest in this over and over and over again until the message is gotten. Because although there's consensus around the table, I agree with Elizabeth that there's obvious dissonance with that consensus in the actualities out there. So I'd like to, yes, Nina. That's very important. And Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Yeah.
I just want to remind everyone that there's a copy of the email from Randy in
right.
your handout, and that includes contact.
That has to post. Randy, can we go on to the next one? Sure. Okay. I'd like to thank you very much for coming and we'll take some action, I'm sure. Can I move on to the next item in the agenda? That is the resolution, and Dan will present it.
Okay. We have a presentation from a group from transportation office. He's asked that we look at the transportation impact mitigation that we're looking at. And what I did was draw up a resolution to either get it off or at least kick off discussion of this. That's related to that, that would reflect support of that. I don't know if you'll have a copy of point number one copy of this. It's just more or less a statement of principles and broad strategies. There's nothing specific here.
Yes, this is in your handout. It's the objective of TIMS, the two page, yes. And that is actually appended to Dan's resolution number 6. So we should have those two pieces of paper available, R6 and the objective of TIMS, two-page document.
What's in the resolution itself, you know, I think these are the goals, and I hope that you look at particularly employee representatives and students everybody look at this and decide whether these are really things that you want to do. I think they're great, but I'm just one person. But what I've written is we decide that this is these are good goals, to use single occupancy vehicle. So I wrote a resolution where the first part of it is supporting that. The University Assembly supports these objective principles generally. So. But the second thing I put in there is that, you know, I don't mean to be, you know, cynical or suspicious or anything, but I wouldn't want us to approve this strategy and then find out 2 years down the line that they made some substantial changes in transportation without consulting us and say, oh, but you approved this. So the second part of the resolution is kind of the prevention of buying a pig in a poke type deal, and that's the that University Assembly with advice from Transportation Advisory Committee continue to be responsible for deciding which specific proposed elements, projects, policies, activities that they implement, so that if they want to put in 200 acres of parking lot open sudden, they would have to come back to us and ask about that. I mean, that wouldn't be consistent with what they say here. So in addition to supporting what I think are really good principles and strategies, I think we also need to continue the gentle education that the trustees told us we're supposed to make decisions in transportation. And then the third thing is that when we make decisions in transportation, this isn't going to be the only guide, that we need to combine the viewpoints of all the constituents and judgment of all the constituents with this plan, you know, to guide us to a good decision. I think that this does, the transportation office, in many ways, it's not independent administration, but in many ways, they've often pushed administration and the planners and people who build these buildings and resources teams more towards environmentally friendly, pedestrian friendly, bicycle friendly things, harder than the rest of the administration maybe even wants to go. I feel that if we can back them up on that, that will help the environment around here and help them, you know, have a greater say in some of these issues you're talking about. I don't think they were asked about the public building, much less, you know, not being able to park it. So I think it's a positive thing, and I guess I move this resolution, and I'd be, but this is all draft, and
well,
mark it up to
you. You want to move this resolution as it's drafted, and is there a second to that?
Yeah.
Who was that? Okay, Tamara, second to. Now let's have. Do we have any discussion of the resolution? Yes, David.
One thing. We probably want to say graduate / professional students, because I take it that I learned a couple of meetings ago that they're supposed to be different.
Is it graduate / or is it graduate and?
And.
Don't / the professional.
No, you don't.
Okay, Bill.
Just a question for my clarification, and being new to the University Assembly. Item 2, the way I read that, states specifically that we have the yes no authority to.
We do, but the administration has to be reminded of this at every opportunity because they have not consulted us recently. And even as recently as last spring, it's from big changes in transportation policy levels at the very end of the year without discussion. Until the trustees withdraws our authority to do that, I think we ought to remind them of it. Or lose it, or just decide we're not going to do it. But what I wanted to avoid was, if I look back several years, and you're just talking about the Red Hood thing, the University Assembly did approve kind of in general principles, sort of the Western campus plan. And that's kind of the, I think, the fifth reason they used to proceed with that. It wasn't very specific. But if you really push them, I don't want to, have them do something that we don't want them to do and have to put back and say, you approve them. I want to make it clear that we're really behind these goals. We really want to give them the authority to go to the rest of the administration and say, look, we need a green campus. We need to do these things. But I don't want to give them a blank check saying, without us to go back and approve them bit by bit.
I'd like to have some undergraduate or graduate student comments on this. Are there any? None?
The graduate student members attached resolution in support of the team.
Okay. Okay.
But I believe that we understand that we don't have the authority to change anything.
Right.
PSA directly, but that's our
participants
here as part of the UA.
That's right.
But we have
to resolution
in favor of the
goal outlining. Terrific. Ari, what did you have to say?
Something I wanted to emphasize about the legislative authority in discussion is in the University Assembly Charter, it specifies that that is by delegation from the president, so that a legislative action of the assembly transportation is subject to the president's approval.
There's lots of subject to the president's approval. The president has to sign legislation from Congress too. But the point is that this clause doesn't say that we will say what happens. It says that we will continue to be responsible for deciding which proposed elements will be proposed or which will be.
I mean, that's of course true. The whole check and balance thing.
Yeah.
I mean, the president, if we do something crazy, like we say, okay, everybody on campus gets a Segway, and that's how we're going to handle transportation. Stands to reason that Gordon might think that's a little dumb. So what he has is the authority to set this aside for 60 days, and either during which time we either convince him that's a good idea, or we come up with a better idea, or essentially veto after 60 days. And so, we do answer to him or whoever's in that position.
So implemented is a good word here, but keeping in mind that it can be vetoed.
Right.
Right.
The thing is, we're not subject to any of the administrators below the president.
Okay.
And they have, but if we do something insane,
the
authority to do it. I mean, if we approve something that's, $200.50 a year as opposed to $200 a year, it's not going to touch it. But if we decide to do something crazy radical, so the idea is that, we do answer to them, but it would probably only be something very, very extreme that we'd override it. And we can't be overridden by transportation or by any other body, it's just the president.
Any other thoughts about that?
I know that one FA member is currently working on resolution support to that also.
Terrific. Any further comment? Let's move to a vote. All those in favor of this resolution number 6, resolution support transportation and mitigation strategies? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Any opposed? Any abstentions? One abstention. I'm sorry, did I see two abstentions? Just one. One abstention. So it's 14 to 0 to 1. Thank you very much, Dan. for putting that together. We have one last little item, and that is something Jules referred to, which is the Coast and Judicial Committee. I have to report that the Coast and Judicial Committee has almost completely finished, just small amendations, the revised code, which is going to be proposed, presenting to you within a week, I would expect, before November 1st, perhaps, and that you, when you get this revision, you will be asked to look at it as thoroughly as you can so that we can have a good, vigorous discussion, debate of it at our next meeting, which is on the 14th, is that right? Of November, Wednesday here, and this will be a meeting at which we hope to do almost all of the discussion of this so that we can take action on it. There'll be a resolution of support of it that will be drawn up at that meeting and for that meeting, and then we would hope to be able to pass it. It's possible that if there's enough comments and discussion, we'll need to go to the subsequent meeting, which would be the 28th, I believe. But if we can do this on the 14th, that'll be all the better for everybody. We may not even have to have the 28th meeting. The point is for doing it the 14th, which is, if necessary, meeting in our calendar, but it was announced as being an on meeting about 3 weeks ago. I think 2 weeks ago I wrote a note to you guys saying that that was necessary. The reason for doing it on the 14th and not waiting to the 28th is that we want to get it to the president by the 1st or thereabouts of December. And if we waited to the 28th and we had something we wanted to talk about longer, then we wouldn't have the backup time of a second meeting. So we're doing it the 14th. And if we really get our homework done, read through the code, talk to your respective constituent groups if you feel that's necessary, although they've had the opportunity to make comment and to go to a forum, and make comment on blogs and go to a forum, and we've had a reasonable amount of comments and we've incorporated them in the changes. But talk to them. Come to the meeting prepared to sign off, we could say, and vote the resolution. On the 14th. Any questions? Yep.
Not about that, but if we want to have the provost come to a regular meeting, her calendar is probably pretty full, and it might be a good idea to try to set up a date now.
Right.
Even though we would have lots of business to do before that, but I mean, it might be January.
Right. Randy's gone, but I would expect Randy would be the person to extend the invitation. Would anybody want to take on the job of getting that set? David, would you
sure
take on the job of getting the provost? Oh, I should mention, thank you very much.
But we would want to meet among ourselves first, right? To know what position to take or her earliest convenience after the
code of the judicial committee. What's the thoughts of the group of the assembly members?
See if the provost is available for the 28th or December 5th.
One thing I forgot to say about the Coast and Judicial meeting, we'll have representatives from the Coast and Judicial Committee here, mainly the person who was most responsible for the restructure, the development of the... It's not a rewritten code, folks. There's most of it, 80% of it is from the previous code, but there are significant developments and changes and we're reworking. And the person who did that, Professor Kevin Claremont of the law school, will be here, and he'll be available to answer questions, as will at least one other member of the campus Coast and Judicial Committee. What was I? Yes. So
November 28th or
December 5th.
December 5th. Those are two meetings that are on the calendar now. Any further questions? Business. Fine, then do I hear a motion to adjourn?
Motion.
Jules seconded. Rodney, all those in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Go.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.